Hello, I'm Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, and this is my podcast, Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes in the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy. But my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to learn more about this world and hear the stories of the other women, like me, the custodians of these great homes. So, in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes, learn incredible history, and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. So please do join me on my very special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Before we get started, I'd like to say thank you to our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA. For those who may not know, Circle DNA is a company that specializes in finding smarter, easier, and more effective solutions to your health by testing your DNA. Listeners, you know how much I love to learn about family history and lineage, and I found my Circle Premium results absolutely fascinating. I learned so much about myself, from my diet and nutrition, skin and fitness, to common diseases and cancer risks. When my daughter Violet and I did the test, we even learned she had a sensitivity to spicy food. That explains why she has been kicking up a fuss at the dinner table for all these years. If you sign up to Circle DNA, you will receive your DNA testing kit in the post. Use the easy-to-follow testing instructions to self-swab at home. Send your completed swab to their laboratory for analysis, and within 3 weeks, you'll receive your results and personalized recommendations. You will also have the opportunity to book 2 complimentary consultations, one with a health coach and one with a genetic counselor. To learn more about Circle DNA, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. If you follow the spine of England up towards the dramatic coastline of beautiful North Yorkshire, knuckled between doting quaint British villages and farmhouses, you'll find a stunning Jacobean estate with enlarged windows and a proud grey stone façade, Birdsall House. The house, like the surrounding countryside, is the quintessence of classic Britain. The rooms of Birdsall are marked with the precision and symmetry of Georgian interiors, and along the walls hang an unbroken line of family portraits. For nearly 300 years, the Willoughbys have nested in Birdsall. The current custodian, Lady Cara, encapsulates every bit of style and taste that surround her. In this episode, Lady Cara tells us about the incredible swashbuckling life story of Britain's most reckless naval officer. Lady Cara reveals how Jane Austen was influenced by Birdsall in her novels, and we explore more ghostly goings-on in Heritage. So thank you for having us today, and it's a great... We've not actually ever met before.
No, we haven't met before.
To set the scene of where we are.
So we are 20 miles east of York and probably 20 miles west of the coast. We are probably 15 miles south of the North York Moors, and we're just on the edge of the Wolds, which is the first bit of rising land which goes down to Lincolnshire.
So you've got a beautiful surrounding and very different to your childhood. Where did you grow up?
I split our time when we were little between Sussex and Argyll. So it is bang in the middle.
Sort of 2017, you actually moved in to Birdsall House.
Yes, we did. We were living in the village and my husband's grandparents lived at Birdsall House and sadly they died. And we've taken over the house directly from them. So we've skipped a generation.
But you've actually owned the house of the Willoughby family since when?
Birdsall House has been in the same family since 1540s and the dissolution of the monasteries. But it was the Sotheby family who bought the land and built the first house. And then the Willoughbys married into the family in 1719. So we've been here for just short of 500 years.
Goodness. So when we came down the drive, there's a wonderful sort of Norman window structure. That would have been part of the monastery.
It was 1100s, and it's part of the original monastic site here.
Which the house was then built on. Because one of the things that I find so interesting is working out how these estates worked in the day, because so often they were so much bigger than they are today.
Yes.
So yours presumably was rather like ours. You owned great swathes of land and other houses in other parts of the country.
It did. And I would love to go back and see how they did work in the day. Birdsall was a part of the Willoughby family. Their other houses were Woolerton Hall, which is in the centre of Nottingham, and another house in Warwickshire called Middleton Hall. So the three estates ran together along with other many estates in the country.
And what happened to those other two estates?
So after the First World War, there were double death duties. So 80% of the assets that the family had to be sold in order to meet the taxes. And Woolerton was sold to the Nottingham Corporation and Middleton Hall was sold to a trust.
Goodness. We're not very far from Woolerton Hall in Leicestershire, Lincolnshire, Nottinghamshire borders. And Beaver literally is about half an hour from Woolerton Hall.
From the roof of Woolerton, we can see Beaver.
Goodness, isn't that fascinating? Well, Beaver's got a very prominent site, which was a site for a fortified position. But this building has never been fortified.
No, this has never been fortified. It's always been a home. And for many, many years, it was run as a secondary home. So people weren't as intent on fortifying it over the years. So it's probably been lucky in that it hasn't been changed as much as it could have been.
No, it feels totally and utterly as it always has been. Can you talk, Cara, about some of the extraordinary women that have called Birdsall House their home?
We do obviously have a lot of strong women you can see in the portraits who've been in this family, but sometimes the stories don't relay down the generations as much as what the men did, which is quite sad because I'm sure they were just as enthusiastic as many of the women we know these days. One of the amazing people in the family wasn't actually at Birdsall. She was at Woolerton Hall, which is the house in Nottinghamshire, and she was pretty unique and she was very vocal. She was called Cassandra Willoughby and she was born in the sort of 1670s, and her father was a naturalist called Sir Francis Willoughby, who was one of the founding members of the Royal Society. He died early and she was brought up really by her mother and a pretty nasty stepfather who treated the children very badly. So as soon as they possibly could, they escaped the stepfather's clutches and went to go and run the Willoughby family estates at Woolerton. And she was bright and articulate and she oversaw the restoration of the gardens and the rebuildings of the house over about 25 years. But most importantly, I think she studied her father's works and papers and she wrote detailed descriptions of her life at Woolerton and how she ran the household. And some of these are the most comprehensive documentations of everyday life from the Elizabethan era.
Goodness. So Cassandra could well still be there today at Woolerton, keeping an eye on it.
I quite like to think she was. I'd like to meet her. She was a pretty strong lady and she hadn't married by the time she was 43. But then her cousin's wife died, leaving him with two very small children. So she married him and went to go and look after them and raise the children. And
As her own.
And he was the Duke of Chandos. So their house was called Canons and they were Handel's patrons and did Canons Water Music and things like that. So I think they were a pretty big pair. She was also the great aunt of Jane Austen. So that gave us a link because Jane Austen's mother and sister were called Cassandra after her. And we think that the names of Willoughby and Lord Middleton in Sense and Sensibility are from this family.
Oh, I knew there had to be a link with the book. That's wonderful. What a woman.
Yeah, she was.
Is there any paintings of her at Woolerton Hall?
There's a painting. We've got paintings of her here at Birdsall and they're in the ballroom.
Oh, I've got to see those. Mm. She sounds wonderful. Mm. Because I think when you live in these buildings, you begin to get to know the characters, don't you? The women that have gone before you.
Absolutely. You end up chatting to them, even though you don't know who they are. And I walk in and I absolutely don't feel that the portraits are daunting. I walk in and I'm quite happy thinking, there they are, they're all
keeping
all
an eye on you, yeah. Or kicking you on saying, you can do this.
Well, hopefully it's positive.
Encouraging you.
I like to think it's positive.
Oh, yes. Well, the only people you really know are going to have your back are the ladies of the past, but they know really the true journey of running Heritage, don't they?
Yes.
So there's another notable character I'd just love you to share with us, this extraordinary story of Thomas.
So Thomas Willoughby was the son of the first Lord Middleton, based down in Woolerton Hall in Nottingham. He was an MP for Nottingham, and he was trying to find his way to Hull, which is about 45 minutes by car from us now. And he got seriously off course and found himself stuck in a snowstorm on the hills just above Birdsall. He saw a light coming from Birdsall House, and he came down to seek shelter and met the Sotheby family. And they brought him in, and in doing so, introduced him to their daughter, Elizabeth. Thomas and Elizabeth fell in love, and they lived here after her parents died for many a year, and they enlarged the house significantly with money from the Willoughby family.
How amazing. So a proper love story.
Absolutely.
And meant to be.
Absolutely.
And he was drawn by the light to Birdsall House. And presumably that would be the Sotheby family of Sotheby's?
It is. It's the Sotheby's of the auction house. And they lived about 10 miles away from here.
So there is some fabulous characters here. I'd love to hear a little bit about Francis.
There are a lot of Francis Willoughbys. It was a name that happened every other generation. We have one Francis Willoughby who was a naturalist. He was born in 1635 and he was fascinated by the natural world. He studied in Cambridge and went on to work as a lifelong friend with his tutor, John Ray. And they travelled all over Europe and all over the United Kingdom looking at flora and fauna. They developed a system for categorising plants and fish and birds. And that identification system became the basis of the plant nomenclature that we have today. It was before Carl Linnaeus, before Darwin, and we have Francis's seed cabinet and bird egg collection from the 1640s, 50s. We think it's the earliest collection of seeds and birds' eggs in the world.
Goodness.
It's amazing to look at the notes he took and the first editions of the books he has and think that they hadn't even realised that swallows migrate. They thought they hibernated. So he's so far from the knowledge that we have today. And yet he was discovering which bird was linked with which bird, how to categorise it in comparison to another one.
And here you are living in Birdsall House.
Yes, it's very apt.
How did the house get its name?
Birdsall is actually an old Norse name and it's Birdshall, H-A-H-L, which means Valley of the Bird.
And here he found his home to be.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Francis Willoughby. So well done, Francis. Tell me about a few other characters during that time.
One of the characters in the family who's always met with a bit of a smile was Nesbit Willoughby. He was born in 1770s and he was one of the most reckless characters in British naval history. He lost an eye, part of his jaw, part of his throat, an arm and a leg all in battle. He helped capture Mauritius from the French and he was twice knighted by the king, who forgot he'd done it the first time, with a little ditty from the family archives who said that he was twice a knight at your age.
So hence the expression twice knightly.
Twice knightly. I don't know whether it absolutely came from that one, but you never know. You never know with these things. But I think he was court-martialed and he was just an incredibly colourful character and one of the people whose antics inspired the Hornblower novels.
Oh no. So that is where Hornblower comes from.
Well, I think it's a mixture of all sorts of historical characters. And we do know that the author spoke to my great-grandfather-in-law and confirmed that Nesbit Willoughby was one of the inspirations.
Oh, there'll be so many listeners who are just blown away with the history of this family. That is a gem, isn't it? A complete gem.
It's quite fun.
Wonderful. The longer I sit and speak with Lady Cara about her family and home, the more I'm humbled to be here. Although learning of the wide-ranging influence Birdsall has had on history, art and culture can be quite astounding, it does not shock me because the moment you walk into this home, you feel the weight of history around you. This is a quick reminder that you're listening to Duchess, hosted by me, Emma Rutland, and this is a podcast produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. Coming up in the show, Lady Cara brings us back to her glamorous milliner days. We discuss the strangeness of seeing the family genes across the generations, and I learn what a ghost clearer is. Before that, I wanted to hear about the moment Lady Cara felt the weight of history for herself and saw Birdsall for the very first time. I so remember the first time arriving at Beaver and seeing it. Can you remember that first moment when you saw Birdsall House?
I'd known James for years and he didn't tell me anything. Very clever. And so we started going out and I still didn't know about Birdsall. And then once we were going out and it was obviously quite serious, he then showed me a photograph which slightly started making the penny drop. And then I think it was only when we were engaged that he brought me up to Birdsall. And then there was a huge amount of family here. It was a day that all the family had got together. And I think I was slightly bamboozled into it.
So do you think in a sense maybe James thought it would scare any girl off, and particularly the girl that he was wanting to ask?
I think there must always be a nerve, and I think I'd find it with my son is, why would a girl want to marry my son? Is it for my son or is it for the house or for any other reason?
Well, because so often the house represents in all that it has wealth and power.
Yes.
But of course, in order to really, truly make it work, you have to be incredibly grounded and make the bottom line balance, I guess.
It's nothing to do with wealth and power when you get inside the door.
We know that, but it can give the wrong message.
It can absolutely give the wrong message. But I think, luckily, I've come from an extremely grounded background and I'm very happy to roll my sleeves up and get on with it.
Which is, obviously, I can see what you've done, but having only been here since 2017, it feels so inviting.
Oh,
so well done you. Because there is that enormous feeling for those who inherit heritage, as your husband and mine have done, of a sense of burden.
There is, and it's interesting, I watch him come back to Birdsall and the shoulders go up a little and he realises that there's so much to do. And I think when you live above the shop, there's a pressure to hand it on in the same condition or better than you inherited it, to make, in this day and age, a lot of different entrepreneurial ideas, see if we can make more money in different ways, different experiences. They've changed these houses so much in the last 100 years that it's a totally different way of life.
Those very, very difficult times with death duties in the 20s and 30s, and in your case, double death duties, lost you so much.
I think the First World War changed everything so, so much on these big houses. The way everyone lived, the way everyone looked, the way everyone saw life. And after the First World War, which was just so utterly devastating for so many families, life could never go back to as it was.
And what happened to Birdsall in the First World War?
First World War, there's a lot of refugees came to live here.
Goodness.
And then in the Second World War, there was a camp in the park. The army took it over. Officers lived in the house and it was a sort of turnaround camp. It was soldiers coming straight off the front lines and being organised and turning around and either going back to the front lines or going
And
home.
Did you have any stories that you found over time, extraordinary stories about members of the army who come back or members of the family?
We have. And actually, in the rooms above us where we are now, we use them as attics, but the last people who were in there were the soldiers of Second World War.
Goodness.
And down in the basements, we opened up some cellars, which hadn't been opened up for years. And there were the mess tins, literally left from where the soldiers had got up and walked away. It was incredibly eerie to think that the last person sitting there was thinking about Hitler and how they were going to win the war.
And if Hitler had have invaded or the Germans had taken over, Beaver would be Goring's hunting lodge. And David has a wonderful story about one of the bombers landing up at Blackberry Hill just above the castle. And he scrambled out of his aircraft and crawled down the drive and met Nanny Webb. Nanny Webb was with the Manners family for a good 60 years and she was there at Beaver with all that artifacts covered in dust sheets. And she actually met this bomber pilot who was crawling on all fours down the drive and took him in and saw him back to health. And he came back for years and years to meet Nanny Webb.
That's amazing.
Amazing stories like that that leave that tingle, don't they,
they
with
do.
Us all.
I don't think any of us can appreciate what life was like in those 4 years.
But now, how are you making this estate work in the 21st century? What are your creative ways of finding revenue?
That the only condition we could live in the house was to make it try and wash its face. And we decided to spread the range of ideas so that, you know, we didn't put all our eggs in one basket. We do weddings, we do events, we run a mountain bike marathon around the estate.
A what?
Mountain bike marathon.
Oh my goodness, I've got to come back to do that. Oh, that is heaven. Do you own the mountain bikes?
No.
So you have a company that come in?
We run it alongside a company called Northern Ride in Malton, who are a brilliant bike shop. They do all the bike side of things and we do all the track side of things.
Goodness.
So it's, you can do 25K, you can do 40K, or you can do 80K. And we have everyone from Commonwealth riders down to 7-year-old school children. And it's supposed to be fun. That's all it's supposed to be. But it's quite a tough ride.
How different from 100 years ago? The sort of Downton Abbey feel to a house is really... the facade,
yes,
that was a yesteryear.
Yes.
And the other thing about heritage, but you always seem to be planning your life for your death.
Yes. So much of it is how, what can we achieve by the time we get there? What can we say about the time we live here? I think when you live in these houses, they are such big personalities and you are made extremely aware through portraits on the walls and history of the family that you are a very, very small link in the chain of the family. And therefore you inherit it, you do what you feel is right in your generation and you hand it on. And then it's not your responsibility anymore.
So coming into the present, how would you describe your role here today at Birdsall House?
I think my husband and I are really guardians of the house and they've got big personalities, these houses, and we just have to work with them. We've changed it from being a pure family home into a business, albeit that the family still lives here. So we're finding our feet and it's really a learn on the roll kind of job.
And did you come across any obstacles?
Oh, there's constant obstacles and they trip you up the whole time. I mean, people are saying, what do you do? Well, I can be cooking bacon sandwiches for 200 one morning and I can be looking at lighting structures and heritage management fire regulations in the afternoon. I mean, there's so many obstacles that sit in our way, but you have to become a little bit of an expert in a lot of different things, which is not always an easy thing to do.
So if they wrote your job description, what would the job description say?
You need to be practical. You need to think outside the box. We can't tell you what you're going to be doing, but you need to be good at it and you need to have a level head. You couldn't write a job description for anywhere like this.
I was waiting for that.
It's just, you can't. It doesn't come up on Careers Day. It just doesn't.
Definitely not. But you're spot on. You couldn't write the job description because if you're too grand in one direction, it'll take you down in another.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I don't know about you, Cara, but I have found that my background in decorating is used again and again every day. And I have an enormous linen room. I throw nothing away because it all gets recycled.
Yes.
Continually recycled curtains or covers for sofas or whatever it is. You never throw anything away, do you? Mm-hmm. Do you find that your background with Philip Tracy and that creativity, do you find that that is useful in running heritage?
I think it constantly comes back. Having trained as a graphic designer as well as a milliner, I think it's an eye for detail. For Philip Tracy, it's very exact detail, getting exactly what a client wants, thinking about how they are expecting their hat. On here, we have to think the same thing. How are we managing everything for our guests? But also in redoing bedrooms and recreating our kitchen, we knocked 6 rooms into one to create the room that we live in as a family. And that definitely had a lot to do with proportions and colour and arrangement. So whether it's a hat, whether I'm doing the graphics for a wedding, for our logo, whatever, I think there's a very, very strong creative link.
Very strong. And lucky old Birdsall House for having you to have that creative streak, because you feel it everywhere when you're here. Can I just ask you, Cara, for our listeners' sake, I just want you to tell them, who is Philip Tracy?
Philip Tracy is a fantastic milliner.
And what is a milliner?
A milliner is a hat maker. And he originally comes from Ireland. He was at the Royal College of Fashion. He worked with some amazing characters, Isabella Blow and Alexander McQueen. And he produces fantastic hats for Ascot and for all the big races and weddings and all sorts.
Society events.
Exactly. It was an amazing world to live in. And working with Philip on an everyday basis, he was an incredible artist. He was a lovely person and I was incredibly lucky to work there. We met the most lovely, lovely people. Grace Jones was a particularly frequent visitor who'd step off the plane and come and join us in the middle of the night when she was awake on American time. And she was always a very, very colourful character in the studios.
Did you ever share anything with Grace?
Well, she drove me home one day from work because it was at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning or something. And we'd been working on some hats to go out to Milan for a fashion week. And she kind of drove me home because otherwise it was me walking. So that was a very surreal moment.
So can you describe, Cara, this room that we're doing this interview in today?
Today we're sitting in the large dining dining room, and it was an addition to the house in 1873. And it's really meant for parties. It's meant for a lot of people. It's meant for a large family. But we still use it today for Christmas. We use it for weddings. We use it for all sorts of events.
So how many can sit around this table?
So this table we can sit 24 at. And at Christmas, we have a lovely, great big dinner party. The house is totally lit by candles.
And where's the amazing Christmas tree?
The Christmas tree's in the front hall.
Wonderful.
If my daughter had her way, she'd have one in.
Well, tell her to come to Beaver Castle, because I do have one in every single room. But that's only because we're now doing this extraordinary Regency Christmas. But this room, if I can just describe it to our listeners. So behind me is a wonderful portrait. Now, tell me about this gentleman.
Behind you is a large portrait, about 10 foot, of Digby Willoughby. Next door to him is another portrait of his wife called Isa. And then on the other side of the room, there's portraits of his parents. And we have an unbroken line of portraits from 1570. So it's great fun to see exactly how the generations all work, their costumes of the day.
And also the family genes again, because so often the look is quite similar. Do you have any portraits that you think, oh my gosh, that's just like my husband?
We do have a portrait, and my son looks so like his great-grandfather when he was small, and the genes were so strong, it's incredible.
It really is. And this room has these wonderful curved pelmets for the curtains to hang. That's very Georgian, isn't it?
Yes, it's a lovely room. It's a soft green colour, which I think the Georgians loved eating in greens, and it works very well. It works very well.
I have just been blown away today by the interiors of this house. Just talk us through the interiors, and of course, the great contrast from what it was when Elizabeth Sotheby was living here, and what most probably was done by the Willoughby money. But as you walk through the door, talk us through the rooms.
Well, you walk up onto a veranda when you first approach the house, and then you walk forward and into what we call the long hall, which is soft, muted colours and surrounded by paintings of the family and their sporting achievements, but also two enormous fireplaces that show that the room was once two rooms, but has now been opened up and made into one large hall. You can turn right to the dining room, and that's another large wing on the side. It's basically a sort of C-shaped house. So the dining room is on one wing, and then on the other side is the ballroom and the oval room, which are more reception rooms, and that's on the other side of the house.
And the ballroom is magnificent, and the colour dreamy. Do you have any ghosts here?
This house doesn't have any ghosts, but I was also aware that so many generations had lived in this house. We also had a graveyard in the garden, and there were every reason to believe this house should be haunted. I didn't feel any ghosts at all, but a great friend of mine came and said they're everywhere. They're all in the bedrooms, they're all downstairs. She was chatting away to an old man who had lost his wife. I thought, goodness me, this is fine, because I think everything is calm and I think the house is very positive. So I didn't feel any creeps or nervousness or horribleness, but I just thought I couldn't live with them. And I just thought it needs to be my house for my tenure and then I can hand it on. So we got a lovely ghost clearer to come in, and it was fascinating listening to her describing all the basements and hearing the laughter of the servants and telling me what they were doing in the different rooms and asking if we had a poet within the staff members who I didn't know about, but apparently he used to stand in the corner and chat away to them. So she said there were a lot of people, a lot of gardeners, a lot of grooms, a lot of the Downton Abbey type household who were all here, and they've now been asked to leave, and the calm house is calm and it's all good.
Goosebumps all over me. So I think there's still a few around. But anyway, you don't feel them. And that's all that matters. And anyway, they're so happy that you're here taking care of this beautiful home. I wouldn't worry. I think you're in good hands.
Thank you.
Do you have ambitions for Birdsall House for the future?
I think we have to take every step as it comes. And this has been really highlighted over the last year with COVID, because it's nothing is predictable anymore. I hope that we achieve our aim for the house to become a successful events venue, but that we can also find a good family work-life balance. My family is my priority, and with them growing up so fast, I'm all too aware that one day, much sooner than I realise, they will have gone and not be here, and I will miss them growing up. So I've got to be careful. That,
you do. That's so key. It makes me cross sometimes reflecting back, and I think of the time and the energy and the stress that it's given me, and I wasn't there at a time, a key moment. I insisted always on doing the school run every day, wherever they were hiding on that roof. And I insisted on always doing bath time, but there were so many moments I've missed.
Well, I think you do as working mums, but I think when you live above the shop, it's more so, and it's more tempting just to go and check something, sort something. The to-do list never stops. And it takes quite a lot of effort to put that to-do list down and just go and be with your children.
Shut the door and shut it through. So you've got one door, your kitchen door, that you can go into your kitchen, and one side, exactly the same as us, is working, and the others. So for me, coming from a theatrical background, it was quite good because it's like a stage door, isn't
it? Yes, exactly.
And I love the fact, Cara, that you say working mums, because of course to our listeners they think working mums, but of course the whole mystique and magic of things like Downton and the Crown have shown these houses to be so full of riches and staff, and of course they're not at all. We're juggling all the time, aren't we, to keep the journey going forward.
We're incredibly lucky about where we live, and I don't doubt that one moment. But as I said, I think the last 100 years have been so spectacularly different, or I think these houses have changed so much in the last 100 years that we've got to look at how life runs today.
Well, you're certainly doing that. And I think 100 years down the line will be how far into the future? How many generations will that be, Cara?
Well, I was looking it up from your last podcast, realizing that you ask about 6 generations. And for us, that's 200 years. So if I look back 200 years ago, we had Henry the Sixth Lord Middleton living in the house.
And what would you say to the lady of the house, Henry's wife, then?
I'd like to find out as much as I possibly could. I'm fascinated by how these houses worked, how this small sort of social world worked of house parties. It's not something that I would particularly want to be in, because I enjoy my work today and I enjoy putting on the events and I enjoy working. I think I'm at home behind stairs rather than above stairs, but I would still be fascinated as how the whole thing worked.
I'm always reminded by David, but I often say 200 years ago, I wouldn't have made it to a scullery maid, let alone upstairs. So yes, it is a very different world, isn't it? So what would you say, Cara, to your descendants in 200 years' time?
I would say don't worry too much about what you do with the house. I would say enjoy. I would say have laughter. I would say keep your family close. And we've got to work jolly hard, but I think we are lucky that we are able to have some fun. And I just hope that in 200 years, they're enjoying the rooms and filling it with friends. They may not have Birdsall in 200 years. Who knows? But if they do, then I hope it's a happy home.
Well, that's the answer, is keep laughing, keep smiling, and keep doing what you're doing, because what an extraordinary story this is. And so much I'm going to take away with me today. Meeting you, Cara, has filled me with a great sense of joy and peace for this wonderful home. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There's always concern when visiting these magnificent buildings in person that the history couldn't possibly match what you see with your eyes. But Birdsall is everything that you see and more. The stunning architecture, beautiful interiors, and the rich family history can only be matched by Lady Cara, who I imagine was handpicked personally by those phantom occupants. And what a wonderful choice they made. Thank you so much, Lady Cara, for welcoming me to your home. And thank you to our listeners at home for joining us today. So next time on Duchess, I speak with Lady Elsa of Stoner Park and learn more about one of Britain's oldest family homes. Lady Elsa tells me the fascinating story of Hollywood's lost aviator, and we discuss Stoner Park's powerful association with the Catholic martyrdom and the saint that once lodged there. See you then. I'd also just like to thank once again our wonderful sponsor, Circle DNA, for supporting the podcast. If you want to learn more about the great work Circle DNA do and make a real investment into your health, visit their website and use the code THEDUCHESS40 for 40% off their DNA test kits. Now it's time for the listener inbox. We've another fascinating email, this time from Marion. It reads, Dear Emma, I'm loving your fascinating podcast with the insight into a different world. No aristocracy in our family, but my great-grandfather was factor to Sir Herbert Maxwell of Monreith in southwest Scotland in the early 1900s. My grandmother and her six brothers were brought up in their estate. Anyway, thank you again for your lovely podcast. I'm looking forward to the next one already. Best wishes, Marion Lowe. It's so lovely that so many of us have a potential relationship with a grand home. I think it reminds us of how connected we were to those who went before, which is something to be treasured. Thank you, Marion, for your wonderful email. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofis and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.